Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Today is Monday, November 25th, 2013. This is John Friend, and you are listening to The Realist Report here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in today. My website is john-friend.net, and you can contact me via email at john.robert.friend@gmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook. Be sure to visit AmericanFreePress.net, and as always, I do encourage you to subscribe to America's Last Real Newspaper. I'd also encourage you to subscribe to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly historical review magazine affiliated with American Free Press. Both American Free Press and Barnes Review are publications definitely worth supporting and subscribing to. They truly are the last real pro-America publications in the print media. Check out barnesreview.org for subscription information. And before we jump into today's program, I just have a couple quick notes to make. Last week, we had two excellent programs. Last Tuesday, I interviewed John Kaminsky, and we discussed his recent essay, The Hitler Test. And then on Wednesday, I interviewed Michael Collins Piper, and we discussed his book, Final Judgment, and the Israeli connection to the JFK assassination. You can find these programs here on the Blog Talk Radio page for The Realist Report. And, of course, I do post the descriptions of these programs, along with the MP3 file and other relevant links, directly on my website, john-friend.net, shortly after the program is over with. I also share these programs on my Facebook and Twitter pages, and I upload the MP3 files of these programs to my old TalkShoe page. My old TalkShoe page has all of my past radio broadcasts going all the way back to when I first started Internet Talk Radio. So you can download any past episode over there. And if you look at my website and you scroll down on the bottom right-hand side of the website, you can see the TalkShoe icon for The Realist Report. And if you click on that, it will take you directly to my old TalkShoe page, where, again, you can find all of these programs. And one other quick note before I bring up my special guest. This past Friday was the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and I drove up to Santa Barbara, California, to attend the conference organized by the Oswald Innocence Campaign and Dr. Jim Fetzer. And it was an excellent conference. Dr. Fetzer did a fantastic job organizing and leading the conference. I had a great time up there. And I posted some photos I took on my website Saturday morning, so be sure to check those out if you have not already. I'm going to be writing a review of the conference for American Free Press, which should be published in next week's edition of the print paper. And all right, with that said, let me introduce my special guest today. He is a returning guest. His name is Dr. Eric Karlstrom. His websites are 911nwo.com and naturalclimatechange.us. Today, we're going to be talking more about the global warming hoax, Dr. Carlstrom's views of 9/11, and mind control via mass media, culture distortion, and social engineering. So, Dr. Carlstrom, welcome to the program. It's an honor to have you back today.
Well, thank you, John. It's nice to be talking to you about these interesting things. I have these websites, and I've been working on these things now, you know, fairly hard for quite a while, and I'm glad to be able to share my views and my experience with you on this.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad to have you back. We've been trying to do this for a while now, and I know you were on a little vacation, and then I went on a little vacation, and I'm glad that we could do this today. And last time you were on the program, we pretty much strictly focused on this global warming fraud. And I actually published an article in American Free Press entitled "Climate Change Hoax Exposed," which anyone can read online. I'm going to have a link over to that article once I post this program. And you actually helped me out with that article big time. I got some good quotes in there from you. And that's kind of what led us, you know, to doing the first program we did together. So I guess just to start off, maybe we can just recap this whole global warming hoax or climate change hoax. And can you just maybe explain what this agenda is really all about and why it's being promoted based on your research?
Yeah, and I think I need to just go back a little bit in time and history and talk a little bit about some of the institutions that I think have gotten us to this point, and it's almost arbitrary where you start. But Dr. John Coleman, who's an ex-MI6 officer, that's British intelligence, and also a PhD in political history, has written a number of books, and one of them is about the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, which began about 1920 out of the office of the British Army of the British Army's Psychological Warfare Division under Sir John Rawlings Rees, who was a psychologist. And this is quite an impressive book that Coleman has put together. And he says that they were a major think tank which tried to learn how to split the minds of the civilian population as a form of psychological warfare. And they started by studying those individuals from World War I in the British Army who experienced shell shock. And so they studied these guys not to cure them, but to figure out how to find out what caused the minds to dissociate and split, and figure out how to apply technologies and techniques that would do this to the domestic population or a domestic population that is targeted as an enemy. Well, so, you know, Sigmund Freud jumps in, and of course he's the father of psychoanalysis, and then his nephew Edward Bernays, who wrote the book Propaganda in 1928, and Kurt Lewin, one of these Frankfurt School Jews from Germany, came, and then shortly thereafter, many of these people wound up in the United States and set up all kinds of spin-off organizations, like the Stanford Research Institute and the Wharton School of Economics. It's all in his book. And one of these spin-off organizations of the Tavistock Institute is the Club of Rome, which you had asked me about. That is was established in 1969. In Italy, doesn't have anything to do with the Catholic Church or anything like that. But the founder is a guy named Aureli Pecci. I think that's how you pronounce it, P-E-C-C-I. And their goal has always been to deindustrialize the industrial societies, reduce the population, and cull the herd, so to speak. They began very quickly with a book called Limits to Growth, which married computer technology with a bunch of, professors got together, and they did a lot of computer projections about when we would run out of this mineral and that metal and this resource, et cetera. And all of the projections turned out to be wrong, but because of the money and power behind this agenda, and, of course, the Club of Rome is all integrated with the Committee of 300 and the ruling elite of the world, and the secret societies, and the cults, and that's where it gets interesting. All this stuff is neo-Malthusianism. They want to, we have to outlaw nuclear power, we have to deindustrialize, we have to, push the peak oil agenda, And, of course, one of the things they've said was, you know, the Earth has a cancer and the cancer is man. So they became then, you know, real strong pushers of the environmental movement. And to a large extent, the global warming fraud comes out of think tanks like this. And they put out position papers and books and things like that. And you know, there was a time in my life when I thought these guys were, you know, really cool, and I believed them.
Yeah.
Now I don't, you know. Now I see their agenda. Now I see that, you know, they are very elitist, and they're very anti-human, and they don't want to share resources with anybody. So anyway, you asked about the global warming hoax. Well, it comes out of think tanks like this, and it's been in the works for a long time, and the governments have, of course, it got translated over to the United Nations, which carried the ball then, this character, Marie Strong, who was in charge of defining what climate change was in such a way that only human man-caused climate change is analyzed. They completely ignore natural climate change, which is much larger. And that's been my field of study as a physical geography professor who studied glacial history. I was on the physical side of geography, and I looked at climatic cycles and you know, and was able to kind of look at the longer term climate changes, which are quite enormous, and realize that this whole thing that they've been cooking up for now several decades is just propaganda, but it's propaganda with a goal, and that is to wean us from our use of fossil fuels, because of course 85% of the world's energy comes from fossil fuels, and when you burn coal, oil, or gas, of course you produce carbon dioxide. So it's built into their assumptions that, oh, we have to find a way to reduce energy use, so we will try to sell people on the idea that we are destroying the Earth by virtue of driving our cars and burning fossil fuels, which, you know, so they have to make all kinds of lies and program these into their huge supercomputers, like the Cray supercomputers. And one lie is that there's been no climate change naturally before 1850. And, of course, the world's 4.6 billion years old, and there have been huge climate changes, natural. And then the other false assumption programmed into all the computer models is CO2 is the main climate driver. Well, carbon dioxide is a trace gas, you know, 4 in 10,000 molecules is carbon dioxide, you know. So it has almost a negligible effect, but they've sold us on the idea that it's a greenhouse gas and that it reflects heat back down to the Earth. Well, this is very confusing to people because they just see industrial pollution and they think, well, there is pollution, right? Yes, there is, you know, there are hydrocarbons and there are carbon monoxide, which is actually dangerous. But carbon dioxide, of course, is what makes plants grow, along with sunshine and water. You know, it's a greenhouse gas, but the greenhouse is very much a good thing because it allows this planet to have life. And so, I mean, there's just one huge lie on top of another. And, of course, lots of money being spent on this, and unfortunately, many scientists willing to jump on that gravy train, you know, I know them, and some of them, you know, are my friends and relatives, but, you know, scientists go where the money is, and now you understand whatever protocol that was, you know, we will control everything by funding. But so the first goal is to, the first goal is to get us off fossil fuels, and that's what Kyoto Protocol Phase 2 calls for by 2050, eliminate our use of fossil fuels. And, of course, unless there's a substitute, that means we go back to pre-industrial lifestyle, and the Earth can only support, you know, less than a billion people. So really what's built into that is radical depopulation, which is what the Club of Rome is all about. They say it. You know, we have to cull the herd. We have to eliminate at least 2 billion people, they say. And then the other thing, carbon, the global warming thing, is a front. It's a cover for getting large amounts of government money spent on geoengineering. Well, you know, our scientists and our military has been working on the engineering of the world's climate, weather modification, et cetera, since before World War II. and especially since World War II. The Weather Modification Organization started in 1950, and the technology, believe me, is just light years ahead of that now. And a lot of that money has gone into these black budget things, as Star Wars was really about that too, to some extent. It was about geoengineering. So now the masters of the universe, as President Lyndon Johnson said, can create drought and floods, steer hurricanes, create earthquakes, and all that technology has been out there. This is Tesla technology to a large extent, has been out there for a long time, but the people don't know about it. So when they now talk about, wow, they talked about global warming, but then it was obvious, oh, that's not working. It's been cooling since 1998. So now we'll call it climate change, and then that's not working, so let's call it climate disruption. Well, as it turns out, the military can cause climate disruption, or weather disruption for sure. Climate is just average weather. So anyway, in a nutshell, that's my perspective on it, and I, of course, have a whole website about this, so I encourage people to look at it. It's now being updated with some new stuff, but it's naturalclimatechange.us.
Yes, and I will have that linked on my site once I post this program as well. And you're making a lot of good points, and it's very interesting. And I mentioned this last time you were on the program, and I think this is really kind of a good way to think of this whole global warming agenda and how it's really been effective and how it's, because, think about it. When you go to in university, and we talked about this again last time, in the universities, this is the paradigm that everybody operates under. And everybody buys this whole global warming, paradigm that, humans are causing all these problems and, we got to stop using fossil fuels, et cetera. And really, all this propaganda is really a fear-based mind control program. And we kind of talked about this last time. What's your take on that? Because if you think about it, all this propaganda is really, it's all based about fear. We're causing all these problems. We're killing the ozone layer. We're killing the environment, et cetera. And so when people are, presented with these dire circumstances and, oh no, the we might even, destroy the planet that we're living on. It shuts down any sort of critical thinking capacity that people would have. And they just go along with this propaganda.
Absolutely. And of course, this is nothing new. I was, 13, John, when John Kennedy was shot. I was in the D.C. area. I was in D.C. area during the Cuban Missile Crisis when my eighth grade friends and I thought we weren't going to make it through the day because there was going to be a nuclear holocaust between the Soviets and the United States. And we really thought that, And then, of course, previous to that, we in my area, and I think all the kids in America, were required to do these ridiculous duck and cover drills, brrr, you hear this terrible sound, and then everybody gets under the desk and puts their hands over their head. And, of course, that's all preposterous, too. This is fear-mongering, as you say. And then I grew up with the Soviets being, the communists being the world's greatest monsters and stuff like that. So always fear of a great enemy. These are standard MO policies. You've got to create the enemy. In fact, there's a book by Sutton, Anthony Sutton, The Best Enemies Money Can Buy. This is, and he was at the Stanford Hoover Institute, I think, at Stanford. But it's an excellent book, and he also wrote about Wall Street and the rise of Hitler and Wall Street and the Communist Revolution. And he was an alternative historian who, dug up the real facts. And, we always create the enemy. We created Osama bin Laden. We created the Mujahideen. We created the Taliban. There's no question about this. I've got it, documented in many books. And we create... name the enemy of the month, and of course Israel does the same, with Hamas and whatnot, you always have to create the enemy to control it, and mind control is a huge part of creating, say, these Islamic fundamentalist terrorists. These people really are the victims of mind control, and those techniques were honed by the CIA and the military in this country in the 50s and 60s and 40s. And this whole business of mind control, which I'm now pursuing, is very objectionable, odious topic. is actually, you know, repulsive in the extreme, and it gets into the cults, and it gets into Satanism, and it gets into ritual abuse, and it gets into torture of children. And unfortunately, there is a huge underground of people who are whose personalities have been split in these kind of ritually abusive situations. And the cult underpinnings of a lot of these things, like 911, start to emerge for me now. And this is after I've been studying 911 pretty much since it happened. And 2002, I wrote a rather lengthy paper called Reflections on the Origins of 911, Three Scenarios. And it was something like 60 pages, a single space, and it's on my website. And at the time, I really debated whether to put my name on it because there was so much fear. Nobody else was putting their name on anything if they were critical of this. But I decided to go ahead and do it because I felt like if I was anonymous, it didn't have the same credibility. But anyway, that's posted on my website. And then in 2006, I tried to write the grand synthesis of figure out exactly what did happen. And I wrote another lengthy paper, taking everything I could find off the Internet and books and whatnot. And turns out I was wrong on several key points. And I think the reason I was wrong was because as soon as 911 happened, the mind controllers went into full tilt, confusing us with planted evidence and people on the ground who were saying this and that. And they're actors, you know, just like you get in a lot
totally.
Of these. Yeah, so it was an operation from the get-go. I mean, everything about it was an operation, including the controlling of the 911 truth movement, which I now am reading is finds out that that has cult connections. And these individuals who come in to lead us at certain points, like David Ray Griffin and then Stephen Jones and then, I'm sorry to say, Jim Fetzer, and then these guys... and then now Richard Gage with Architects for 911 Truth. These guys are part of the system. They are what you doing what you call limited hangouts. They will admit this and this and this, but they will keep people from seeing that and that. And as long as they can keep us sniffing only half of the clues and half of the story, they really still got us where they want us. So I've always been independent on this, and like I say, my 911nwo.com website is rather large. I've written a lot of articles on that, and still working on it with the mind control. And I'm not making any money, and I was never invited to a single conference, and I was one of the first professors that I know of who got out there and, you know, tried to analyze this. So I think that the 911 truth movement has been... and this goes right back to, you know, the connections with the CIA and Tavistock. I mean, this is all part of the operation.
Yeah.
To control our perceptions of 911. My own feeling is I mostly solved it in 2008, but it's not supposed to be solved, just like the Kennedy assassination is never supposed to be solved, because the people that carried it out are the real ruling elite of the world, and they are above the law.
Yeah,
and they are international in character. They're not confined to any one nation.
You know, it's interesting hearing you explain this because I think you're right. Although I'm not convinced Dr. Fetzer is some sort of gatekeeper or anything. I think he's been out of the individuals you mentioned. I think he has been very objective and fair about most of this stuff. But maybe we'll disagree on that. That's no problem. But it's interesting hearing you explain this because really there seems to be a basic template for how they do these operations. There's a very traumatic event or a very traumatic narrative with the whole global warming situation. And then they present us with a solution. And then there's obviously people that don't buy into that. And they have the, you know, the alternatives, you know what I mean? So all the avenues are controlled, basically.
Yeah. Well, let
you know
me
what
just
I mean?
Go back to – yeah, let me go back to Fetzer. I had written this article in 2006 thinking that I had more or less solved it, although I was wrong. So, you know, I admit that. Of course, if you're trying to find the truth, you dump anything that's not the truth, you know, and you say, gee, I'm sorry, I blew it, you know, I was wrong. Of course, that's the difference between somebody who is sincerely trying to find the truth and somebody who's trying to lead people away from the truth.
Exactly.
But in 2006, there was a local gal here who was doing a radio show, Melody Hallett of Truth Quest with Melody. And, no, I think it was 2007. I went to the Chandler conference, Chandler, Arizona, on 911. And there already the 911 truth scholars had split into two camps. Stephen Jones, who definitely has intelligence and military and Mormon connections, as well as directed energy connections. He was the guru of the moment, saying it's nanothermite or whatever, it's explosives in the building. And, you know, he's kind of a nice grandfatherly kind of guy. So he, you know, and he was a PhD physicist at BYU. So he pulled a lot of people over in his camp. And then there was Jim Fetzer, who was the ex-professor of philosophy of science. Now, that's philosophy of science, now mind you, it's not science, and from Minnesota, I believe, and he was obviously on the outs, or for public consumption, he was on the outs with Stephen Jones, and he was saying, if you want to find out what happened, don't listen to old Jones over here about the thermite, go look up the work of Dr. Judy Wood, who's the person with a PhD in a field most related to what is actually happening. And her PhD was in materials engineering, and her PhD was on optical interferometry, in other words, physics. And she went ahead and analyzed, we talked last time, I think, thousands of photographs and said, I think it was directed energy weapons. This was exotic weaponry that's never been used before on this scale. Well, so I thought Fetzer was, you know, my ally for sure, and I interviewed him a couple times. And he may be mostly sincere, but I think that there are many dimensions of this which are being kept from the 911 truth movement, and that's all of us. So I would encourage people to work independently, not to take what the experts, quote-unquote, say with a grain of salt. Fetzer, for one thing, is a believer in global warming. And when I tried
Is he really?
Yeah, it came out in one of the interviews. You know, he said, well, there is pollution, isn't there? And I thought, well, that's really a stupid comment for a guy who's supposed to be. Well, I'm sorry,
wow,
but it's not.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
I mean, he didn't seem to have any understanding of the issue, but he dismissed what I was saying about global warming being a hoax. So it's typical M.O., again, this whole business of limited hangout, you know, I admit to this and I don't admit to that. And then, of course, as time goes by, they have to admit to more and more things. So the goalposts keep shifting. But getting back to, you know, my brag that I more or less solved it, I don't think I really solved it. But by 2008, I think I'd pretty much established, at least in my own mind, that what brought the towers down, the Twin Towers, was some form of directed energy weapons. And I did interview Dr. Judy Wood on this, and she convinced me. What happened was some kind of molecular dissociation. Now, I don't know, maybe physicists have figured out how to reverse the strong force, which is one of the four forces in the universe which holds the nucleus of atoms together. But what happened was that the buildings, the cement and the glass and the steel, you know, atoms hold things together. And all of a sudden, these things are flying apart and turning into dust and what is actually smaller. Dr. Judy Wood shows pictures of things she calls fuzzy blobs, the little kind of gray ozone-looking things that kind of move around, and they're very, very painful when people apparently come into contact with them. And she saw this on the photos. And then she shows photos from space watching that gray, fuzzy blob stuff going into the upper atmosphere. Well, this was not just simply a controlled demolition. This was a demonstration of new exotic weaponry. Now, there may have been in the building bombs as well. There probably were, and there may have been many nukes used. But what you saw was a wave front of of the building just kind of going from solid to dust, and that wavefront moved at the speed of gravity as if two different, I won't say they're not lasers, but let's call them, directed energy at some wavelengths, are targeted on the building, and maybe two different wavelengths interfere with each other right in the space of the building, and that interference of the waves cause a new physics to take hold, and a new physics then actually causes the molecules to fly apart. So I think that that's what brought those buildings down. I think a missile was used against the Pentagon, and I think there were no planes that hit any of the buildings. What we had was video fakery. There was a lot of, there were some really good YouTubes that came out, Octopus 911 and September Clues, and these were on Fetzer's website. So, you know, in a lot of ways, I think Fetzer did a lot of good stuff. I'm just not sure, you know, there's not a whole lot of people in the 911 movement that I trust. I tend to think anybody who's got a position of authority is, you have to be careful, you know. But anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
I think go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say that, yeah, I wanted to get your views on 9/11 for sure, because we barely even got a chance to really talk about it last time. There's two different aspects of 9/11 I wanted to talk about. One was what you were just mentioning, how the towers actually were destroyed. And you're pretty convinced at this point that Dr. Judy Wood is on the right track with this directed energy weapon type thesis. Is that pretty much the conclusion?
Well, let me flesh that out a little bit. There's this lady up in Salida, Colorado, Melody, who did a radio show, and the carrot that she used to entice me to be her co-host was that we might be able to interview Dr. Judy Wood. Well, it took 2 years, but we finally did get to interview Dr. Judy Wood, and then after that, she would never do an interview with me again, although she did it with other people. So this is a dangerous topic, and she could be that she's just been in fear for the safety of her life and that of her family, et cetera. I do think that her explanation is by far the most reasonable and logical. And if you go to the DVD that Fetzer sells of his I think it's his 2007 conference in Madison, Wisconsin, the Science and Politics of 9/11. And I've got the notes on that in my website. She does an excellent talk and lots of photos. And she starts off saying that it was a new Hiroshima in the sense that what was demonstrated to the world was a new kind of weapon. You know, so the intelligence agencies of the world and the leaders of the world would know then that, you know, look out, man. Well, look what they can do. They can completely destroy anything, anywhere, anytime, you know.
So. Yeah. I've heard some interviews with Dr. Wood, and I've never actually read her book, but I'm pretty familiar with her work. And, to be honest with you, I tend to think that all of the imagery of 9/11 was actually fabricated. And I'm not sure, are you familiar with septemberclues.info? I've interviewed Simon Check, who actually produced September Clues, the documentary. And their sort of basic thesis of 9/11, to me, makes the most sense. And obviously, I'm not coming at this with, you know, with sort of the scientific background that you have. But based on what I've seen, it seems to me that all of the imagery, including obviously the videos, whether it was the official news coverage or some of the amateur videos that we were shown of the plane striking the buildings, all of this is fabricated, obviously. But
I think we're talking about two different things here, John. I think
One second. They're even saying, but Dr. Carlson, they're even saying that the collapse footage is fake. And they make a good case, and I don't know. I mean, I can't sit here and make the case for you, but they make a good case that even the collapse footage is fabricated. And I don't know what your take is on that. You know, if you've ever looked into this information. or looked into their 9/11 paradigm, so to speak?
Well, as far as I recall, the September Clues series was excellent, and it did a pretty good job of proving that the plane images going into the towers were probably the result of video fakery.
Absolutely.
And that anybody at a workstation could have done that. All they needed to do was take the composite photos from all the photos that have been taken by UAVs on unmanned aerial vehicles in Manhattan, and then create a new perspective from any perspective, and then just insert an image into it. And they even made some obvious mistakes. But that's very different from 10,000 real photos on the day of 9/11. That's what I think Judy Wood is analyzing. So
mm-hmm.
I totally agree there is video fakery, but I think if you look at some of Judy Wood's presentations and read her book, I think those photos are very, very convincing. And what's really interesting, and I don't think you could fake these, she shows photos looking down on the remains of the buildings with these great big circular holes punched out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think that that's a fraud. I think that we're looking at some artifact of the technology that was used. And you know, she talks about how this gray, creepy stuff keeps coming up, this little gaseous ozone type stuff. They keep hauling in truckload after truckload after truckload of soil or dirt to try to absorb it, and then they take the dirt out. I mean, this was going on for a year or so after the actual event. So I think it was a massive experiment, like Hiroshima and Nagasaki a little bit were, you know, of a new, very, very exotic kind of weaponry used on a very large scale. But, I mean, we can disagree about
interesting.
That, but I would
yeah.
suggest I would suggest uh-huh. you look at Dr. Judy Wood's talks and take a look at her book. I've got it. And I've, you know, on my website, I've got my interview with her. You know, that's available to listen to as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, you know, I got a lot of questions about it. And to me, I mean, 9/11 still is just an absolute mystery to me. I'm not – I tend to think that the September Clues perspective is – I mean, it does make a lot of sense to me, but, I have questions about, you know, how much of this stuff is fake. You know, how do we know that all these – for instance, the collapse footage, how do we know that this is fake? How do we know that all these photos, you know, can't be, you know, there's all sorts of questions, but it's an interesting take and one that is not really explored or talked about too much. And I find it fascinating. I mean, you're right about, you know, their analysis of the amateur footage and, you know, the live media footage on 9/11. It's absolutely fraudulent. I mean, anybody that still thinks that an airplane crashed into the World Trade Center building is just simply being deceived in a very major way.
And I've went to a lot of these conferences, and here's how the 9/11 truth movement works. They get people on different sides of every issue, the no planes versus the planers, you know, and then they just start yelling and screaming and throwing, you know, stuff at each other. I mean, they just make it ugly. So
mm-hmm.
so it's like you take a very fine knife and you cut walnuts into smaller and smaller pieces. That's all part of the operation, you know. So and there's probably at least one operative for every sincere, I don't know what the ratio is, but there's plenty of very loud operatives who seem to be able to, you know, get a lot of airtime and keep everything nasty. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to just mention, I've got an article in front of me here. It's by Nico Haupt, and it's, I think, 2006. And
mm-hmm.
he was active in the New York 9/11 Truth Movement. And it's called the OSS, that's Office of Strategic Services, that's the precursor to the CIA. The OSS Tavistock Mind Control Cult-911 Truthling Infiltration Timeline. And it starts in 1865 with the publication of Alice in Wonderland with Lewis Carroll. And
oh,
then
wow.
talking about how Lewis Carroll became a member of an occult society of psychical research, the SPR, and then that and then he went on. They went on to found the Fabian Society in Britain. But then of course that has connections with Britain's Minister of Defense and the Bilderberger movement, and you start to see these amazing connections. The Waldorf School in Germany with Rudolf Steiner is mentioned, the beginning of LSD, the Stanford Research Institute, 1946. And then he's got a very interesting diagram here. And you could check it out if you wanted to look it up. It's the website is http://911closeup.com, NICO/91truthling_line_cult4html. Anyway, in the first diagram, it starts off in the upper left with the Tavistock Institute, which I mentioned, and then moves over to the right, OSS, that's the precursor of the CIA, and then the CIA. Well, the CIA comes out of British intelligence, so that's a good thing to remember. British intelligence formed the OSS, which became the CIA. Okay, and then the next arrow that goes down from Tavistock and OSS is the Urantia cult movement. There's a Urantia book, which is like an alternative religion. It's got this great big long Bible, thousands of pages, which was apparently channeled to one of the members of the Urantia group. And this guy makes the claim that probably that person was victim of some kind of synthetic telepathy. This is 1955. Which may have actually already been going on. In other words, she's channeling, thinking she's getting this from the heavens, and it could be that she's getting it from some jerk in intelligence. Anyway, Urantia, then it comes down below that. The next box is Logic, Reality, Paradox, which this author says is what 911 is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a logic, reality, paradox so that people can't tell the difference between reality and fake reality. And so just what you just said, the last comment you made, you said that's the way it is, you know, that's the way it seems to you, you know. You're still struggling with where's the reality here, where's the unreality. And that is what it's meant to do, according to this.
That's right.
And then And so, in other words, this stuff is carefully designed by people who are very, very highly educated in these fields of mind control and psychology and whatnot.
Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was reading the article. Let's see, it's called Mind Control: History and Applications. I believe it's the sixth article in your series on the on the 9/11 NewWorldOrder.com website. Or I'm sorry, it's 911NWO.com.
Right.
And I'll have this linked on the site. And this really stood out to me. You had a statement on there, and there's some other sections I'd like to read a little bit. You say, all Americans have been victims of sophisticated mind control techniques directed at the quote-unquote group mind by the Tavistock Institute and its many spin-off organizations. And, you know, obviously this is, you know, 9/11 was a major, major mind control operation. I think you could make the case that this whole global warming idea is a major mind control operation as well. And you know, all the lies about World War II and the Holocaust and all this other stuff, these are all, I mean, they're all used these techniques, these sophisticated mind control techniques that are directed at the group, not necessarily an individual. So let's talk a little bit more about this, because this is very, very important, and this is what is absolutely fascinating to me, and this is the type of information that really needs to be brought to light and explained and expounded upon, because this is how we're being controlled.
Well, the darkest part, I think, of our government's history is the series, and it was a huge program of mind control experiments. Right after the CIA formed, you know, there was Operation Bluebird, and then Artichoke, and then MK Ultra, and then MK Delta, and then many, 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 in which our CIA, in cooperation with our military institutions, gave funding to top psychiatrists at various universities and hospitals to do actual experimental programming on trauma-based or torture-based mind control. Now, all of this stuff comes from the Nazis because a bunch of top Nazis came over and were smuggled into this country by the CIA after World War II in Operation Paperclip, about 5,000 of them. Well, I don't know the numbers. You hear different numbers. But the rocket scientists came.
Can I ask you just a question about that? Because this is something that comes up quite a bit. You know, the Nazis were engaged in these mind control operations. Where's the proof for that? I mean, I just don't – what is a good source for that information? Because I almost view that as more Jewish propaganda about the Nazis, about the National Socialists.
Well, yeah. Well, there's actually some books about this. I've got one of them here. See if I can put my hand on it. There's a whole book about Operation Paperclip. But, yeah, you know,
I do know that Operation Paperclip was, it was a legitimate operation. And after the war, many top, National Socialist scientists and other figures actually came and worked for the American government and the Soviet government and the United Kingdom and whatnot. But I just question whether or not this type of stuff was actually going on. I don't know. I mean, could you give us a good source for that information?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking for the book. It's in many, many, many websites. I'll see if I can, as I talk, I'll look here. But, yeah, Joseph Mengele, who's sometimes called the Auschwitz Angel of Death, is a very, very prominent figure in that, as well as some others who had unlimited...
His name always comes up, Mengele.
Yeah, Mengele, sometimes called Dr. Black or Dr. Green, or he had many pseudonyms. And he's really perhaps one of the most monstrous characters of all time, I can tell. And he supposedly did come to this country. That's in several books. A number of the survivors now are recovering their memories, and they identify him as well as other programmers. They also identify the internal structures, the imaginary mental structures that were implanted in them when they were being tortured as children. And the purpose of these structures is that their programmers can now manage these different alter personalities like so many computer files. And they put in their demons and animals, alters and booby traps. And if the person is ever going to spill the beans, they feel suicidal, all these programs. And all this, of course, took a long time to develop. There's hypnosis, there's drugs, there's electroshock, there's you name it, child rape, et cetera. And apparently this came from the bloodline of Illuminati, which probably goes back, a few thousand years. And it's basically satanic. I mean, it's sometimes referred to as satanic ritual abuse. I've also heard it referred to as Jewish ritual abuse. They may be one and the same thing. But our friend Dr. E. Michael Jones, who wrote that great book, which I recommend to everybody, called The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History, he's written an article called Jewish Nazis. And I think that if people look a little deeper, I don't think Diana Spingola is there yet, but I think if people look a little deeper, they're going to realize that the Nazis were used by the power elite, just like the... Jewish power elite created Bolshevism and the Soviet Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, and controlled it. I think the same can be said also for the Nazis. So there's this
See, I'll just say right now, I definitely don't agree with that, but that's okay. Keep going.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just getting this from things I read, you know.
Sure. Yeah, no, I understand.
So, I guess it depends on what you believe, what you read, do you believe and not, it depends on your, I guess your BS filters or whatever. But anyway, I think that the point is that the CIA systematically and the U.S. government, top secret mind control programs, were to systematically test and improve the techniques of mind control of individuals so that they could make these Manchurian candidate slave robots that would then fulfill various functions that they would not normally do under normal conditions. And part of that is to learn how to wipe the mind clean. And this was called depatterning by Dr. Ewan Cameron, who was a CIA psychiatrist in Canada. It would also involve Canada. And so he worked very hard through all kinds of electroshock and LSD applications and enforcing lack of sleep and making people sleep too long and absolutely removing all memory from certain people's minds. And then his colleague was rigged up football helmets with tape recorders in them, which were to send messages that these people would have to listen to for 18 hours a day. And the idea is to repattern the mind. So the idea is to erase the mind and then remake it according to your own specifications. And now, interestingly enough, this Ewan Cameron was head of the World Psychological Association, the American Psychological Association, and the Canadian Psychological Association. He was a high-level Mason. He was from Scotland. And he was obviously very highly respected. He was at a university in Canada, in Toronto, and a research institute funded by the Rockefellers. So you start to see these connections, and the Masons, the cults, and as you say, the secret societies and the Jews. This is the subsurface, and the Wicca, and the witchcraft, and the Satanism. I mean, all this stuff is underlying these operations. And this is what most, and I'm just starting to get a glimpse of this now. And it's not pleasant research, and it's not fun, but I think it's very important, so that's why I'm doing it. I'm right now finishing an article on cults, and there's thousands of cults, and some of them are destructive cults that can cause, you know, people to be killed. There are many, many examples of cults that are infiltrated by the CIA in order to do this kind of programming, such as the People's Temple of Jonestown and David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. And these things have intelligence connections. So after the 1975 Frank Church Senate hearing investigation into the CIA's misdeeds, you know, they had a special reason to take their experiments underground into these cults, and where it had been before anyway. But now there's this huge proliferation of these bogus, ridiculous cults. And again, the point is to control, manipulate people, turn them into mind-controlled slaves.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I wonder, you know, if this type of stuff is still going on today.
Oh, Lord, yes.
You know, it's really interesting. I've read quite a bit about this. I mean, gosh, I remember when I first kind of started looking into 9/11, I discovered a book called The Franklin Cover-Up, which talks a lot about this stuff, you know. Not only it kind of ties in, because there seems to be a connection between, you know, it's a really ugly subject, but, you know, sort of international pedophile rings and, you know, MKUltra mind control type stuff. So there's a connection between all these things, drug running, you know, sex slavery, all this stuff is connected. And it's,
absolutely.
It really is some awful, awful stuff to read about. But yeah, I think it's something that, you know, we need to take into consideration and understand that this type of stuff did in fact go on.
Yeah, and I think every person who's kind of normal, that is to say not a psychopath, will look away. You know, they don't want to look at this stuff. And it's just a normal defense mechanism to try to avoid this. But let me give you a quote that I'm going to use in my upcoming paper. This is by James R. Gaines in Time magazine in 1997. He says, "Evil on this scale is impossible to comprehend. To know who murdered JonBenet Ramsey is to know what world we live in." I don't know if you're familiar with the JonBenet Ramsey case, but she was one of these, you know, child beauty queens, and found murdered in her own home. Yeah, probably pedophilia is involved there, and who knows what cult secret society involving very, very, you know, respectable, prominent members of society, which you saw in the Franklin cover-up as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it is truly a very horrific and very ugly subject. But yeah, this article that you wrote here is, you know, goes through all this stuff. And see, what I'm more interested in is how these techniques are applied on you know, a sort of grander scale, on a societal scale. And you have a quote here, or actually, I'm sorry, it's not a quote, it's just sort of a summation of what Dr. Fred Emery, who was a senior behavioral scientist at Tavistock, he outlined three phases of social environmental turbulence that are basically implemented against target populations by Tavistock social engineers. And the first one is superficiality, in which the threatened population adopts shallow sloganeering in place of ideals. The second one is fragmentation and panic, in which social cohesion falls apart. And then the third one is passive maladaption, in which victims take fantasy trips of internal migration, introspection, and obsession with self. And he talks about this last phase as being referred to disassociation and self-realization. And this really, I mean, gosh, it makes a lot of sense when you look at how what the media has turned our culture into. And it's not only the media, it's also other, you know, culture-forming institutions, you know, our educational system, you know, you name it, our government even. You know, this is what they're doing. These are the techniques that they're using to control us and to push us in their desired direction, so to speak.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, I, you know, sometimes like to try to boil it down to a few simple solutions, and one of them that occurs to me is that in 1913, in December, a couple days before Christmas, Congress passed the Federal Reserve Act, which gave the control of our economy to a group of bankers in Europe who we probably know what ethnic group they mostly belong to. And then in 1947, the Congress passed the National Security Act, which gave us the NSA and the CIA and the alphabet soup agencies that are spying. And that basically gave the international bankers a private army. So in those two laws, our country was given away to the international power structure, the ones that are connected to all these cults, unfortunately. I think there is a master cult. This is what I'm coming to, and I can't say for sure, but I think it is satanic. And so therefore, I think people need to wake up. And if they're not in favor of Satanism, then they need to take whatever steps they need to as a you know, sovereign citizen to say, no, we don't want that in this country. Mm-hmm. We don't want that in this world, you know. And I don't,
exactly.
I don't know that we can, you know, stop it, but we can at least stand in the way, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I think it's important to talk about this stuff to so people can understand and really get a grasp of how we're being manipulated and how, I mean, just think about what's happened to our society just in 20 years. I mean, you know, I'm 27. When I was a kid growing up, you know, homosexuality was not normal. It was not promoted and elevated in the media the way it is now. I mean, there have been very real changes just in my own lifetime that I can see. And then, you know, compare America and, you know, say the 1940s or 1950s, American culture back then, to what it's become now. You know, people
yes.
getting married and having families. I mean, this is almost a thing of the past anymore.
Yeah, and it's all as per the long-term goals of this one cabal. And it was articulated many times. It was articulated in the Illuminati papers in 1776 with Adam Weishaupt. It's articulated in the Communist Manifesto with Karl Marx. It's articulated in the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. You know, destroy the family, destroy the church, destroy the nation state, destroy private property, destroy the monarchy. And then there are going to be no institutions that will stand between us and complete control of the entire world. And we are going to usher in a utopia. And, by the way, you know, well, I think we know what group is doing this. You know, if we don't by now, you know, is it all the Jews? Probably not, you know, but certainly, well, Christ said, those who say they are Jews but are not Jews but of the synagogue of Satan. So there's kind of a riddle in there. But
well, certainly, as an organized political, economic, and cultural force, it is the Jews. I mean, you know, there's no way around that. They are the ones that are really behind all this stuff. And then that can be documented and well-established, even coming from their own mouths. I mean, they admit this stuff in their own newspapers and books and whatnot. I mean, it's no secret anymore. And you know, that's the most amazing thing about everything that we're seeing today is, I mean, this stuff is really out in the open. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu was quoted in Haaretz, a mainstream Israeli publication, just admitting, you know, Israel benefited from 9/11. 9/11 was the greatest public relations stunt ever committed in our favor. That was another quote. Yeah, that was another quote by an Israeli counterterrorism strategist. I mean, he literally said this. You know, it's right. Like these people are just in our face, you know, just admitting this stuff nowadays. So it's really no secret. And by the way, let me just mention, if anybody wants to call in, we will take some calls in the second hour. If anybody is listening live and wants to call in, the number is 646-564-9512. So again, we will take calls in this hour. But yeah, to me, that's the most amazing thing, is this whole New World Order agenda is really no secret anymore. You know?
No, and of course, it's just like I said about the limited hangout. I mean, 20 years ago, if you were to say New World Order, you would be pounced on. But now, you know, things have progressed to the point where, you know, they can't keep it under wraps, so they say it, you know. So the goalposts keep shifting. But yeah, I've got an article in my 911nwo.com website, part four of my series on mind control, which is about the controllers. And as you say, I just quote the Jews. They just say, you know, we're going to rule the world, and we're never going to assimilate, and we are the world's destroyers and seducers, and you know, and not only that, we're gods and you're animals.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, we're talking about master race times 100 here. You know, they really have this conceit. Now, one of the interesting things that I've been kind of wondering about, what makes these people so willing to go along with these evil programs? I mean, are they psychopaths? If so, are they themselves victims of these kinds of torture-based mind control programs when they're kids? I mean, or is there a percentage of them? I mean, we did talk about satanic ritual abuse as being perhaps a little similar to Jewish ritual abuse. I mean, could these people actually, some of them, be programmed multiples? I mean, these are the questions that I'm asking. I don't have answers right now.
Yeah, that's – we'll put it this way. I wouldn't be surprised.
here's a little interesting coincidence anyway. You know, the people who are these Manchurian candidates who are the victims of these programs – sometimes called chosen ones or the chosen generation. Well, the Jews consider themselves the chosen people. Is that just a coincidence and a pun, or is there some association there? I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I wanted to go back. We were talking about Tavistock. Could you maybe give us you kind of did at the beginning, but maybe just a brief overview of Tavistock, how it was founded. And also, I'm curious, what role did the Frankfurt School in Germany, you know, all the Jewish Marxist intellectuals, what role did they play in setting up the Tavistock Institute? Because the Tavistock Institute kind of spread out all over the Western world and corrupted everything, you know, our culture, you name it, you know. A lot of this stuff goes back to the Tavistock Institute, and I think the Frankfurt School, you know, played a leading role in setting up the Tavistock Institute, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, you know, it's a very good question. The way I tend now to look at it, John, I think you have an international elite. I think they often tend to control powerful countries, such as England and Germany. I think they would control then both to some extent, the German and the British governments and the American government and certainly the Israeli government. I think that, you know, you have these loci or areas where these things emerge. Very, very important are England and Germany. But that doesn't mean that they're identical, because they're parallel. I mean, the Frankfurt School was a group of Jews between World War I and World War II who were doing these kinds of Well, I guess you could say they were trying to implement the ideas of Antonio Gramsci, who's another Jew in Italy, who and of course a little bit like the Fabian socialists of England. So it's international. But Gramsci's conclusion was, okay, communism isn't working. We're going to have to do it more slowly. Well, that's the same conclusion as the Fabian socialists. And Gramsci's
incrementalism.
Yeah,
they talked about
the
this idea of incrementalism. Yeah.
Yeah, the long march through the institutions. That was what Gramsci's phrase was. And then now you have this think tank of highly trained and I guess fairly intelligent Jews in the Frankfurt School figuring out how to implement that. And so it's an international agenda, always has been, has never been restricted to one country. But Germany's very important, and England's very important. And there's a lot, of course, Freemasonry and John Dee come, and a lot of the Wicca and a lot of the secret societies are coming from England, and quite a few from Germany with the Bavarian Illuminati. So what we see is we see these things spring up in each country. Now, there is a crossover in the sense of people like Kurt Lewin. He worked, I think, both. He was associated both with the Tavistock Institute and the Frankfurt School. He was a German Jew who then came to the United States and founded many, many organizations here. He was kind of the author and architect of the whole sensitivity training thing, which was real big in the 60s when I was growing up. A lot of that's again coming from the mind control people.
I'm sorry. When you say sensitivity training, are you talking about like cultural sensitivity training? Like
no, I'm talking about kind of group encounter groups. You know, where people kind of confess to each other their deepest, inmost, whatever you know. And it's a psychological technique. You know.
Okay. Yeah, we
so
see
these guys are psychologists. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it was Freud who even said when he was coming to America, he's bringing the plague to America. I think that's like a direct quote from him. You know, all these ideas. And see, and this is something that Dr. Kevin MacDonald explains very well in The Culture of Critique. All of these, you know, radical, you know, cultural or political movements that we saw really all throughout the 20th century, whether it was, you know, Marxism, communism, feminism, you know, all these, you know, the whole range of ideologies and radical movements, they all really stem from this group, from this Frankfurt School and, you know, sort of their colleagues. And these are the people that literally took over our educational system. They took over the universities. I think all of them, you know, kind of, you know, whether it was Princeton or Harvard or, you know, University of California, they really sort of ensconced themselves in the universities, and they trained all of the people who we have teaching us today. And that's, you know, that's why their ideas have been able to spread and multiply and really become institutionalized in our culture.
Yes, totally. I agree. I mean, I retired from 30 years of being a professor, and believe me, it is a propaganda system. You know, in the different fields, you have the different major Jewish figure who dominated the field and then tells us what's what, you know, like Foucault and Diderot and all these English critique guys, you know, who take the meaning out of all texts, and now it's just what we say it is. And then in anthropology, it's Franz Boas, you know, and a bunch of fictional science there. You know, it just go down the line in what you're dealing with now. And I think MacDonald uses the term Jewish science. And Jewish mm-hmm. science is whatever the heck they want it to be, because the attitude of the rabbis is, hey, we're gods, and nature's not important. We will just decide how things are.
Yes.
And because we've had all this tradition, this rabbinical tradition of being the authorities, we'll get together and we will tell the world how it is. We will concoct the new scientific verities. And
I'm sorry. I can't finish your thought. Oh, I was going to say,
well,
it's
I think global warming is a perfect example. Global warming is Jewish science.
Yeah,
and I think you can find the connections, you can find the individuals to make that stick. And of course, there's a lot of computer science involved in the modeling, you know, the global warming story, you know. So it's a combination of Jewish science and high-tech computer garbage.
Yeah. You know, it's almost as if they've totally reversed the natural ordering of the world. I mean, that seems to be what they're trying to do. Everything is backwards. You know what I mean?
Totally.
In everything, whether it's science, economics, you know, cultural or familial, you know, relations, whatever, you name it, they've totally reversed everything. And, you know, you'll see a big part of his book is he talks about how all of these radicals, I mean, most of them, almost to a man or woman, they were all Jews pretty much. And their primary driving factor was to combat perceived anti-Semitism and this idea of an authoritarian personality and Christianity. You know, that's what this was all about. They were attacking our traditions, our traditional way of doing things, our traditional, you know, political systems and societies. That's what this was all about, is overturning that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we've been reading the same stuff, John. It's delightful. The three most important books that I can think of on this subject that I would highly recommend to anybody who's got, you know, the ambition to tackle these books. First of all, there's a book by Douglas Reed, a British journalist, that came out in 1956 called The Controversy of Zion. And he gives a history of world politics for the 50 years prior to 1956, so in other words, the first half of the 20th century. And then there's the book by Kevin MacDonald, who is a professor at, I think, the CSU or the UC University down around San Diego. And his is called The Culture of Critique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I think you just made some good points from his book. The subtitle is An Evolutionary Analysis of Jewish Involvement in 20th Century Intellectual and Political Movements. And then the best one for me is, and I feel like I need to read it more than once, is another professor, Dr. E. Michael Jones, who's a Catholic, who's written a book called The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, Its Impact on World History. And right now, I'd be willing to trade away the great books of the Western world, which came out of the University of Chicago, which was a Rockefeller operation, under Robert Hutchins. That collection was made. It includes Marx and Freud and all these, you know, basically fraudulent, ideologically based people who were promoted by this ruling elite. I would trade away all the great books of the Western world for this book by Michael Jones, The Jewish
Right.
Revolutionary Spirit, because that explains what's going on, and what has been going on for the last 2,000 years is a war between the Jews and the Catholics, the Jews and the Christians. And he just documents it, you know, one century after another. And it's a history that's almost lost, in the sense that I don't think you're going to get that history at very many universities.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is really what history is all about. It's this conflict between these radical Jewish revolutionaries and largely, you know, Christian Western civilization. That's what history is really all about. I think that's very clear, and I think his book, you know, I actually have never read E. Michael Jones's book. That's something I should definitely probably get a copy of. But it's good. You know, I wrote an article about a year ago entitled Organized Jewry, Destroyers of Western Civilization. And I referenced his book, and I've read some reviews of it, and I'm pretty familiar with it. But yeah, I mean, this is really what it's all about, and you're certainly not going to, you know, you're not going to read this book in any university in America today. Although,
well,
it is
1,200 pages.
Yeah,
but you're right. You know, to show you how, you know, insane this whole thing, and you're absolutely right about the goal being to absolutely turn everything upside down, to create a new reality, which ultimately is the goal of, well, it's a satanic goal. And what's being pursued, and again, like Paul said, we are dealing with powers and principalities. So, you know, and then you start to look at England in the 15, 1600s under John Dee and the Christian Kabbalists. And Kabbalism, of course, is Jewish mysticism, which is basically magic and astrology and tarot and and controlling angels and using angels as spies and letting demons into your life, you know, and it's supposedly white magic, but white magic turns into black magic. But anyway, so, I mean, yeah, this thing has legs. And it's not any one country, but it is this spiritual war, like Paul said. We're not dealing with flesh and blood. We're contending with powers and principalities and wickedness in high places. And, you know, I mean, I don't like it. I wouldn't say it if I hadn't discovered it to be true, you know. It's not the world I thought we're in. But
yeah,
you start digging in, that's the undercurrent of what's happening. And I think most people are not psychopaths. I think psychologists say about 4% are psychopaths, which is, by the way, about the percentage of Jews in the world. I don't know that there's a one-to-one correspondence, but, of course, a psychopath is somebody who experiences no guilt after they do crimes. Well, we've heard of the Kol Nidre prayer that Jews say every year, which says, I can lie, steal, cheat, kill a goy, the Kol Nidre says, I can make any promise or pledge or business deal I want with a goy, and then I can renege on it in the following year, and I won't pay any penalty.
Right.
Yeah. And then their Talmud says they can lie, kill, steal, cheat, swindle goys, and they should, because we are.
Yeah.
Subhuman.
It not only sanctions it, it actually encourages this type of behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you have a really interesting quote, or it's actually more of an excerpt from Brzezinski's book, that he wrote in 1970, Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize, apparently he is Jewish. I didn't realize that.
Well, I was Brzezinski? More or less inferring that from the context of his quotes. I didn't realize
it
either.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, Jones, in his book, goes into this whole issue of Moranos and Conversos and crypto-Jews, people who converted, at least on the outside, to Christianity in various European countries. Well, for one reason, they were told they either converted or had to die. You know, so you can kind of see why they did. But this caused a whole a phenomena of people who were Christian ostensibly on the outside and enjoyed the rights of citizenship, but on the inside, they were still Jewish. And I think some would claim that this is true for most of the Jews. They might have converted on the outside. And so this is why Jews are always changing their names. And they're excellent spies. And if you look at, like, say, 15th, 16th century Spain, where Jews had a tremendous power, they essentially fulfilled the roles of the CIA, the spies, and the IRS, the tax collectors. So you go right back through history, and these are the fields that they have carved out for themselves. They're going to slavery. They're going to usury. They're going to loan at exorbitant rates. They're going to sell drugs and alcohol and destroy the peasantry, say, in Russia that way. You know, all these ways to destroy the host country. So, you know, and part of their whole strategy is to have the diaspora and then travel into all the different countries of the world and form a nation within a nation. So you can't tell who's a Jew. And various places, you know, times in the past, various popes and leaders have said, okay, this is not fair. You guys are trying to destroy us, and we don't know even who you are. So now you have to wear a yellow badge or something, you know. This has been done several times in the past, and then, of course, Hitler tried to do that again. But there was a reason for that, and that is that the Jews are always at war with their host nation, and their allegiance is always with their own nation, which they define as Judaism.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm 64, and golly gee willikers, I didn't really discover this until just a few years ago. So,
yeah.
You know, they're pretty clever about this, you know. I mean, they're very clever about this, but 'cause they've got a lot of experience. But if you do read a book like Jones's book, you know, all the questions are put laid to rest, and you can see the big pattern.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Well, let me read just a bit of this excerpt here that you got in your article. Again, this is from Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, American Era, and this is a difficult word to pronounce. The technotronic era involves the or controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous up-to-date complete files containing even the most personal information about the system. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval authorities. Today we again witness the emergence of transnational elites across boundaries. For long, social authorities will be highly nationalist, both in spirit and outlook. The nation-state is gradually yielding. Progress will require greater American sacrifices. Most more attempts to shape a new monarchy will have to take consequent risk to present relatively favorable American position. And then to praise them, he's actually kind of saying how it would this for humanity. And he says, by 2018, technology will make available nations fair, of which only a bare minimum of this is. One nation may be a competitor, thoroughly weakening the population before taking over its own armed forces. Alternatively, techniques of weather modification could be employed to produce prolonged periods of drought or storm, a system that would seriously impair the brain performance of very large populations. And then, let's see, he goes on to say how they could impair people's brains through, electronic warfare and whatnot. And then he says, the new global consciousness will emerge out of fragmentation and chaos. And that's what it's all about. It's about destroying any sort of unique racial or national identity. It's about, just making mindless slaves of this New World Order system. That seems to be what it's all about. And he actually, he just openly says that in his book.
Well, bear in mind, John, the Talmud, which is a huge collection of books, but that's the most sacred and holy, I think, of the Jewish scriptures. It supersedes the Torah. But it's just rabbinical commentary over the generations and centuries. The Talmud says, when our Messiah returns, every Jew will have 2,800 slaves. So this is their holy book. Their holy book is that they're going to take over the world and form a Jewish utopia, and they're going to take it from everybody else and then kill everybody else, or maybe keep them some around for slaves. So, you couldn't get darker. And of course, Kevin McDonald has written actually a trilogy of books, and the first two talk about Judaism as a survival strategy for a group. And this is kind of an ancient tribal strategy to become parasites in other countries in order to destroy those countries and then eventually take over everything. So, what is it that can make can drive a group of people to have this kind of fierce criminal determination to kill their neighbors over a period of 2,000 years? Well, I have to say, there must be some connection with demons or with the devil or something like that. Normal human beings don't act like that. But this group acts like that, apparently, and you could explain the behavior as that of a psychopath. So
exactly,
but that phrase,
that's so true. People don't want to hear that, but you're exactly right.
Yeah, well, you know, and that quote you just gave from Brzezinski, I mean, that's 1970. And what he's talking about there is geoengineering, weather modification as a secret weapon. And he's also referring, I think, a little bit to mind control as a secret weapon. And both of those things were well known in the military establishment and the intelligence establishments in 1970, but they were not known at all to the domestic population. I was around in 1970, and I certainly didn't know anything about it. It turns out that the government can keep secrets and do these secret projects, but eventually it does seem to want to come out, like now all the mind control stuff. The MKUltra and a lot of that stuff has come out, and the good news is that psychologists and psychiatrists are working on it to actually heal the victims and the survivors rather than to torture them and turn them into slaves. And they've mm-hmm. done a lot with learning how to reverse engineer and deprogram them, and they're learning a lot about how the cults install these programs and these alter personalities in them, and a lot of it's based on the Jewish Kabbalah. The tree of life and all this happy horse shit. I mean, these guys, to me, it's insane. I mean, I'm looking at a whole system which, to me, is gone beyond insane. And so I could never make this stuff up. I'm reading it, and I'm trying to understand it, but I'm sure not inventing it.
Yeah, you know, but the thing that's so dangerous, though, is with their control of the mass media, they can literally execute trauma-based mind control operations on the entire world mm-hmm. without us even reading it. I mean, I think that's really what 9/11 was all about. I mean, it was a trauma-induced fear-based mind control program executed using the media and, you know, scripted people that were presented on television. Look at Sandy Hook. Sandy Hook is another example.
Yep.
If you've looked into this alleged shooting out in Connecticut last year, but the whole thing is an entirely fabricated event that was presented as if it were real in the mass media, and it's a very traumatizing event that, you know, is a perfect template for this trauma-based, fear-based control program. And that's the danger. It's like, you know, we have psychologists working with individuals on a one-on-one basis and, you know, physically tortured and whatnot and subjected to these techniques. We need this for the entire population because we're all being subjected to this through the media.
Yeah. One aspect of the paper I'm doing right now on cults is I'm looking at some definitions of cults and how do they operate and what are the parameters of cults. And it turns out there are many institutions in society that have cult-like behaviors, including, you know, some corporations and certainly the military and certainly academics. You know, there's cult-like aspects to our everyday life. Fortunately, now we know more about this than ever before, so if people want to read up on this stuff and educate themselves, they can kind of defend themselves a little bit, like you're doing. It's like, wait a minute, you know, we're all being programmed here, you know. And then, of course, once you make that realization, then you can defend yourself. You know, well, I'm going to turn off this program, or I'm going to tell my neighbors that, you know, Sandy Hook was a hoax, you know, and 9/11 and the war on terror and global warming. And these are so many hoaxes, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's so difficult for people to, you know, objectively and rationally deal with these issues because of the trauma and because of the fear.
Yeah.
And the people who are doing these operations know this, and that's why they utilize these techniques. Incredible.
Absolutely. It's like you walk up to a friend or a relative, you know, and it's like they have there's a little force field around them which keeps them from even being able to consider some of these ideas. And I think that force field is comprised of fear, because if they were to question 9/11, they would have to question everything, you know. And they don't want to question everything. they want to go out on a date on Saturday night or get this job or, you know, whatever their agenda is, you know. They've got a life to live, and they don't want to try to have to fix the whole system, you know.
Yeah, Yeah, that's right. It's just too heavy. It's too much for people to deal with, it seems like. Most people anyways. And I mean, you know, we're dealing with a very psychologically damaged society. You know, on all sorts of levels, whether it's, you know, on emotional basis or, you know, what we've been exposed to in the media. I mean, in any way you look at it, we're a very damaged people. So it's almost, you know, for some people, it's almost impossible to even rationally, you know, deal with this type of stuff. They just physically and psychologically cannot do it.
To tell you the truth, John, I do travel around. I was just back in Tennessee for a banjo workshop. I like to play music, and one of my websites is on that. It's just ericcarlstrom.com. I've made like 16 CDs and a movie. As I travel across Kansas and then Arkansas and then, you know, into Tennessee and last spring into North Carolina, this is a huge country, and people are different from place to place. You know, you go through from Kansas on, you're in Bible Belt, you know, and you turn on the radio and you hear, you know, and some of it's really good stuff and some of it's really bad stuff, you know. But, you know, and some of that is mind control too, especially with the Christian right, you know. And it's meant to be, but there's a lot of good people in this country who, you know, are very sweet, and of course, religion is one. Christianity, especially, is one thing they're trying to destroy. I think that, you know, maybe one of the best antidotes to this whole thing is to, you know, to become more dedicated in one's, you know, Christian outlook. You know, and I've experimented with Buddhism too. I think Buddhism's great, but it's not our country. It's not our culture. And if we all just meditate and, you know, and turn our minds blank, well, aren't we just doing what they want us to do? Develop a tabula rasa in our mind, which then can be written on by somebody else? I don't know. But Christianity says love your neighbor and, you know, love God and gives you an ethical base to live a good life. And, you know, I think that's – all this research is making me want to hold on to that more than I ever did before, because, you know, my own background is as a Unitarian, which is awfully weak in Christ, but I've always been kind of a believer. But now I'm a believer more than before, you know.
You know, that's exactly how I am too, honestly. That's exactly how I am. I mean, I was kind of raised in a Christian, you know, family, you know, Catholic family, but it was never something that was, you know, terribly, you know, important in my life, I guess. But now the more and more I learn, the more and more I'm sort of falling back. It's like, wow, that, you know, there's a reason why, you know, Christianity has been so important in our civilization and our history. And, you know, I realize that more and more as I learn, it seems like, and I find myself going back to Christianity.
Yeah. And to Christ. I mean, Christ is the figure who comes along and stands up to the Pharisees and calls them vipers and sons of the devil and children of hell and, you know, synagogue of Satan, and says that's not the way to go. You know, it's like he called them on their stuff and he said, listen, you know, you want to know what God looks like? I'm what God looks like, you know, and I am about, you know, healing and forgiveness and loving and all that kind of stuff, you know. So in other words, the Jews wanted, you know, somebody who was going to take over the world for them with a sword, and he wasn't that, so of course they they crucified him. But I, you know, really it does come down to those paradigms. Do you worship a god of power and control, which gets you into all kinds of, unfortunately, magic and manipulation of spirits and things like that? Or do you worship Christ, who is the principle of a loving God? I mean, he is that incarnate. The more I read about this stuff, the more it just comes down to those two choices. And, of course, you know, you have the freedom of the gospel, the good news. But the good news only makes sense if you understand the bad news. And the bad news is that these Pharisees were doing this kind of, I think, a trauma-based mind control, abominations, killing their children, sacrificing them to demons, demonology, just all kinds of rotten, terrible stuff to get power. And Jesus said that's not the way to go. And unfortunately for us, our society followed him, culture followed him for 2,000 years and built up Western civilization, you know, beautiful music, architecture, literature. You know, it galvanized the best out of people. And obviously there were problems, but I mean, Christian civilization is Western civilization. So if we now if we say, okay, you know, it's rotten, let's just, you know, we have a terrible government, let's just scrap it. Well, that's just what they want. I mean, they want to make government so dysfunctional that people are going to be willing to say, okay, the Constitution, we don't need it. Look at those pedophiles in the church. Just scrap it, you know. So anything that they do, they do to destroy the institutions. And as Michael Jones says in this book, John, that you got to read, he says, you know, in the old days, they said that the uneducated should not talk to Jews because Jews were very practiced in saying the things that would make Christians lose their faith. In other words, the Jews always coming at the Christian to subvert and to destroy that faith. And most of us certainly today couldn't tell a Jew from somebody else or let alone what their real goals are, you know. That takes real discernment. And as I say, at this point in my life, I'm just starting to get that kind of discernment. And that's after, you know, living a lot and experiencing a lot and having been maneuvered and manipulated by some of these forces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. That's very interesting. You know, I wanted to ask you, do you have any concluding remarks about, you know, any of this sort of mind control stuff or 9/11 or global warming or anything? Because there was one last article I actually emailed you earlier this afternoon I wanted to bring up. So I guess before we do that, do you have any concluding remarks about anything we've talked about previously?
Yeah, well, I sure appreciate being able to put all these things together or try to. I just want to go back to this little diagram here I told you about that's it's on mm-hmm. this topic of Tavistock, the CIA, and 911. Starts off up in the upper left, Tavistock, and then goes across the page, OSS, CIA, and then it goes down through Urantia, Logic, Reality, Paradox, Department of Defense, Mind Control Programs, and then underneath the Logic, Reality, Paradox is the Club of Rome and the Peak Oil Scam. And then below that is Scientology, another one of these intelligence-based cults, which is into UFOs, which I think is another hoax that gave the CIA and the military places to practice their mind control experiments and programs. And then below that is SAIC, which is the scientific something or other. Anyway, SAIC was all into exotic weaponry. Even before 9/11, they had a magazine called Wavefront. And I think SAIC probably would know who makes the technology that did 9/11 if they didn't. And then below that, below the Club of Rome is the Green Party concept. Below that is Oregon homegrown weapons of mass destruction terrorism under the Bhagwan Rajneesh, a cult, and the Salmonella pollution of the local towns that was done by this Indian guru. And then below the SAIC is the Rudolf Steiner cults and Anthroposophy and the Waldorf School cults. And then the cults of mind control hubs of the 80s, including Waco, Davidians, Heaven's Gate, Jonestown, Scientology, Satanism, Moonies, Unification, Yogaville, Yoga Alliance in Pennsylvania. And that takes you up through the 80s. And then if you want to go up into the 90s, he's got another diagram here. If I can find it.
Mm-hmm.
No, let's see here. Oh, it's right on the back. Okay, in the 90s, it starts out in the upper left with, again, the Osho, Rajneesh, the Bhagwan in Oregon. And then on the right, it's got DARPANET, which becomes the World Wide Web. And then you've got, as you go down, CIA's MKUltra to develop methods of covert control of unwitting people for exploitation by U.S. government defense and intelligence agencies. And then you've got 9/11, Logic, Reality, Paradox in 2001, butter planes, butter buildings, plane hugger religion. And then in 2004, you have the first Orwellian infiltration success of 911 truthling movement cult by Byron Belitsos, who was a member of the Urantia cult, aforementioned. But he is now supposedly opposing 911, but he's an advocate of planetary democracy and world government. So,
wow.
Okay, and then Jim Garrison comes along. He's co-founder with Mikhail Gorbachev and the Club of Rome of the World Forum, and he's another big advocate of world government. He's another 911 activist. Then you got Les Jameson, also of Urantia cult, and he's also with NewYork911Truth.org. And then underneath the CIA MKUltra, you got George Shultz and Bechtel and their association with the Esalen Institute in California and all kinds of mind control operations. Then you get to 2005-2006, you have the second Orwellian infiltration success of 911 truthling movement cult by David Ray Griffin, who is a CFR author, and he's an advocate of one world government. Then you get Stephen E. Jones, who's Brigham Young physicist, and he's experienced with Los Alamos exotic weaponry. And then you got the Archbishop Bob Bowman of the 911 Truth Party, who in fact headed the Star Wars program in the 1980s. And he was going to become a candidate in Florida for president on the 911 issue. Well, here's a guy who's speaking at all these 911 conferences, head of Star Wars. Well, 911 was the culmination of that Star Wars research. Directed energy, exotic weaponry used against one of our own buildings. And then CIA, Department of Defense infiltration of 911, truthling movement cult by Judith Shamash of Urantia. So here now you have the marriage of the cults, the intelligence agencies, the high tech, the military, and now it starts to become possible to see the dimensions of what we're facing, at least at the surface levels. And then you go deeper, and again you get in this long-term war between the Catholics and the Jews, and then along come the Freemasons and John Dee and the New Atlantis with Francis Bacon and the magic of the Kabbalah, and holy moly, this stuff gets crazy.
Wow. That is fascinating. You know what, I'd like to post a link to that on my site. Maybe could you do me a favor after this program's over with and just email me a link to that?
Yeah, I'll email you the link to this article, which has these two figures. Yeah.
Yeah, this would be interesting for people to check out. I know I'd like to see it myself. So yeah, I mean, this idea, this trauma-based mind control sort of paradigm that we can use to investigate and to, you know, not only this global warming scam, but also 9/11 and many other events, I think is really useful. I think it really shows how we're being manipulated psychologically and emotionally to advance this globalist internationalist agenda.
Yep, I think so.
So
I think it's an aspect of it that we can't ignore anymore.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. And there's been a lot of reluctance by a lot of people for a long time to get into this stuff, and I think it's absolutely essential to really understanding, you know, how we're being manipulated. You know, without that understanding, we're going to continue to be manipulated. We're going to continue to fall for their BS.
Yeah, well, you know, there's two quotes that I think I'm using in my latest article on cults, and one is by Thomas Jefferson, something to the effect that you can't have a democracy without having a well-informed citizenry, which, of course, means
exactly
that the press, the fourth estate, has to be honest, you know. But then you cut to 1980 or 81, and former Wall Street banker or lawyer William Casey is now the director of the CIA under Ronald Reagan, and supposedly at his first staff meeting, he says, when everything the American people believe is false, we will know that our disinformation campaign has succeeded. So there's the head of our own CIA.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saying, okay, this is what we're going to do, team. We're going to fool the Americans on everything. And so they're not going to have a clue what's going on. Well, this is a statement of somebody who is at war. This is information warfare. This guy is This guy has declared war on the American people, just like the British government and the Tavistock Institute declared war on the American people right after World War II, according to John Coleman, who wrote these books on the Committee of 300 and the Tavistock Institute. 1944 or whatever, 1945, right after World War II, Britain declares war on the domestic population of the United States because, well, we served our purpose. They want to take us over. And the Anglo-American Alliance, you know, we have been part of that for the last century, but Britain wants to hold the reins again. So, you know, if you think that's a good idea, then I guess applaud all those British guys on our media now, on the news programs, and say, oh, what a cute accent. But if you don't think that's a good idea, say, you know, look at what the Founding Fathers said about King George. I mean, that's exactly where we are again, a series of usurpations by the British. And the British, yeah, by the way, they have all this magic shit that John Dee and the Kabbalah. I mean, this is crazy. But you've got to read this book by Jones, and he has a whole good chapter on Freemasonry and another good chapter on the Kabbalah and John Dee, this character who was the original 007. So there is a connection between the cults and the intelligence agencies that goes way back, probably before John Dee and certainly before Helena Blavatsky of Theosophy. But these guys are agents, and they are using these cults for political purposes, as well as in mind control.
Very, very interesting. You know, to wrap up the program, I wanted to bring this article up. I don't know if you got a chance to check your email today, but I sent you a link over to an article that I found on the Daily Stormer, dailystormer.com. And the title of it is American Universities Are Degenerate Drunken Sex Pits. And I wanted to get your take on this because I knew you have a lot of experience in the university. And I, you know, I myself went to college. And, you know, there was this video released by some people at the University of Colorado in Boulder. And, you know, it's just like they're at a party and everybody's drinking and dancing. And, you know, it's a typical college scene. This takes place on probably every university all across the United States. And I'll be the first to admit, when I was in college, I partied all the time. You know, I partied all the time. But, I mean, really, that's what college was all about. And that's, you know, it's probably I don't want to say it's even worse today, but I'm sure it's, you know, basically the same thing as when I was in school. This was only, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So, I don't know. Did you get a chance to read that article or check out that video by chance?
Well, I'm looking at it now, John.
Okay,
thanks.
Okay, yeah.
I will enjoy the videos, but you know, yeah, I mean, one of my favorite movies is Animal House, you know,
right.
you've seen that, and that is the National Lampoon thing with John Belushi. And, yeah, I mean, this is kind of the nature of that age group. But the real question, I guess, is, you know, are students getting the truth, and are they getting propaganda? Are they being excluded from the real knowledge? And I think, you know, I think that it is a very, very finely honed propaganda system. You know, like I say, I was when I went to Cal State University in 1990, if you said you weren't a feminist, which I did, you were taking your career in your hands, because there would likely be some real, you know, aggressive feminists who would do everything they could to just, you know, get you academically dead, you know, to exclude you from tenure, et cetera. And that's what happened to me, but I didn't buckle under. I fought it and I won. But feminism, environmentalism, multiculturalism, this is the modern religion at universities. You're not allowed to say anything about Christianity. You can say anything about any of the other religions. And these other things, the humanism and multiculturalism, I mean, these are articles of faith, and of course,
gay
rights and homosexual marriage and blah blah blah. You got to believe this stuff, or you have to pretend that you go along with it, you know, even to survive as a professor. And so this is terrible. You know, this means that the university has lost its values, its moorings, its identity. So I definitely agree with that. I don't know if the, you know, the degeneracy and debauchery is any different. I mean, I was around in the 60s when the CIA was dumping all kinds of LSD and drugs on campuses. And you can better believe it was pretty crazy. And now I understand there's even more.
Yeah. But, well, see, that's the thing. It's like, you know, kids, a lot of people go to college and they really have no business even being at a university. They don't have the intellectual capacity to even excel and really get a good education. So, I mean, there's all sorts of problems with the university system that I see today. But, I mean, you know, this part of it where, you know, it's all just one big party. You know, you're not even there to learn. It's all about, you know, meeting people, you know, going out and drinking and just having fun. That's kind of, you know, that's really sad to me. You know, I mean, I did have a lot of fun. I partied a lot and did a lot of cool things and whatnot, but I also took my education very serious. And I just really don't know if there's a lot of people that do that. I mean, there's obviously some. Yeah,
I think
ahead.
So.
Yeah,
I mean, I just retired 2 years ago, and you know, I say, look at one of my classes, like my climatology class, and maybe it had 20 people in it, and I'd say a handful of them, maybe three or four, five, you know, really good, serious students, you know, as good as you'd find anywhere else, and mm-hmm. then the other 10 or 15. Maybe five of them you're totally carrying because they don't have the skills to be in college. And then there's the 10 in the middle that they could go either way. You know, if they put some effort into it, they might get something out of it, but you don't know if they're going to put some effort into it, or, you know, other than just the assignments. You know, so I don't think that's changed. I think that there are still bright students. This was in Turlock, California, you know, and I think our best students were probably as good as any students anywhere. Mm-hmm. But there's not as many of them. So what kept me going there was, okay, our students may be coming without much of a background in, say, geography, which is what I taught. But, you know, they have not been well educated. But these people are human beings, and they're smart. They've got brains. And if they apply their brains, there's no telling what they can do, you know. So you don't limit a student based on, well, you shouldn't. And, of course, some professors would and write somebody off, you know. But you are proof yourself that, you know, you went through that stage in your life and you partied a lot, but you also took your education seriously and you came out with your brain cells intact, and now you're using them, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, but you're, you know, you were talking about how just controlled the university system is, you know, as far as the information, you know, you're basically being fed this New World Order line on all subjects,
yeah.
Whether it's history, science, culture, whatever, you know, there's no... There really is no room for debate. I mean, you try to take a traditionalist stance, or you know, especially if you get into some of the racial things, you know, you try to be, you know, pro-white, for instance, you're going to be kicked out of the university. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no room for that. So that's a problem. I mean, that to me is a very big problem. But you know, these things can be overcome. You know, I as you said, I'm a perfect example of this. You know, I got out of college and was able to finally, you know, pursue my own intellectual interests, and look where I'm at today.
Yeah, and I would say I'm the same way. I mean, I spent 30 years as a professor, and in the last 2 years, I've really been studying. And this is what I've really been learning, you know. It's like, okay, now I took those skills, whatever skills I learned, and now I'm applying them to things that I think are the most important things, you know, for long-term survival of our society, which means, you know, over 300 million people, and the United States is really the, you know, the powerhouse of the world. So as goes America, or whatever the grammar is, so goes the world in many ways. So in a way, we're lucky to be here, even though we're on the front lines, because we can make a difference, you know, hopefully.
Mhm. Yeah, I think
so. We have to have the attitude.
I think you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and wrap up. We're just about out of time. This is a very interesting conversation, and I'd like to do it again. I know you said you're still working on your article dealing more with the cult aspects of mind control and whatnot, and some of the history of it. So maybe we can have you back on once you're finished with that, and we'll talk more about it.
That'd be great, John. I appreciate the wide-ranging nature of our conversation. It's very—it's fun to make these connections. And again, I highly recommend E. Michael Jones's book, 1,200 Pages, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. I think Jones is brilliant for making connections. He will connect the music with, you know, the Frankfurt School, for instance, and the 60s, and the how the communists used folk music in this country in the 40s and 50s, and all my heroes, or many of my heroes, like Pete Seeger, it turns out, were Jews who were trying to cause class strife in this country, and it was all propaganda. And so I'm a musician today because I was inspired by those guys, so you can't say it was all bad, but... you know, it's and Theodore Adorno was of the Frankfurt School, and he was supposedly writing a lot of the music that the Beatles put out. And his goal was to use music as a subversive factor. And Michael E. Jones has a book, I'm reading now called Dionysius Rising, The Birth of Cultural Revolution Out of the Spirit of Music. Well, I mean, I never thought about this stuff before, but, you know, I'm sure glad that Michael Jones did, and now I can start to understand the society I live in a little bit better and the times I lived in. It's so many ways that our culture has been manipulated by social engineers, and music is certainly one of them. So anyway, yeah, let's keep the conversation going. It's very stimulating, and I'll keep in touch with you on the email, and we can set up another one.
Okay, well, sounds good. Thanks a lot for joining me today. We'll go ahead and sign off. I will be back tomorrow. It will more than likely be in the late afternoon my time, probably 3 or 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I'll be talking with Tom in Connecticut. We'll be talking more about psychological operations and information warfare, so stay tuned for that. I will post details on my Facebook page once I have the show time finalized. And I want to thank Dr. Carlstrom for joining me today. I will have his websites linked once I post this program, and I will talk to everyone tomorrow.
Okay, thanks a lot, John. Have a good one.
dog on the street.